Today, Jesus tells the criminal, today, not tomorrow, not in 3 days, not in many millennia, not at the end of time, today you will be with me in paradise. Perhaps this statement is not too shocking to those of us accustomed to proclaiming that now they're in a better place. We, at least those of us who believe in such things, expect that our loved ones who have died are now in heaven. There's death, and then there's heaven, nothing in between. We hope, most of us, to 1 minute breathe our last breath, and the next minute see St. Peter at the pearly gates. But for many Jews and early Christians, paradise was not something they could have envisioned immediately experiencing after death. Even those destined to be resurrected, most Jews and Christians believed, had to wait for the Messiah's arrival or return, when a final reckoning would take place. The joys of a greater existence, far surpassing this one, were not possible until then. In fact, Jesus himself did not arrive in heaven instantaneously after his death. Jesus didn't ascend into paradise following his death and burial. He descended, the Apostles' Creed says, into hell, or, according to some translations, to the dead. Then on the third day, not the same day, the third day, he rose again from the dead, appearing to his disciples. And Jesus didn't even enter heaven until long after that third day. According to the Acts of the Apostles, he stayed around on earth for 40 more days before ultimately leaving earth for heaven. How then can Jesus tell the criminal that today they will see each other in paradise? Jesus has no plans to be in paradise today, if we understand paradise as heaven or a heavenly-like realm. Jesus plans to descend, if not to hell, then to somewhere, and after 3 days to return to earth. Only after several weeks will Jesus ascend into heaven, 43 days after dying. Some scholars believe that in the context of this passage, paradise signifies a kind of purgatory-like intermediary land between earth and heaven, where the dead will await final judgment at the end of time. But that hardly seems like Jesus' intent when he speaks of paradise here. Jesus, remember me, the criminal begs, when you come into your kingdom. Jesus' response equates paradise with the full glory of God's realm, and in doing so indicates that paradise is no mere intermediary state. Paradise is the end goal, the ultimate realization of what God desires for every created thing. Importantly, paradise does not wait for 3 days or 43 days or thousands of years so that God and humanity can get their act together. Paradise happens on the very same day that Jesus is nailed to the cross. Paradise happens while Jesus descends below the earth, coming into touch with all those who have been lost or dismissed or rejected or forgotten. Paradise happens amidst the darkness, amidst the suffering, amidst the uncertainty, amidst the despair. Somehow, in some way, paradise happens. Somehow, in some way, paradise seeps through. I can't tell you what paradise looks like. I can't tell you where it is or how to find it. But I can tell you one thing I know. Paradise is a home for criminals. or at least two of the three we hear about today, the one who asks to be remembered and the one who promises glory in return. Both are convicted criminals, sentenced to death by a political machine fixated on finding evil and eradicating it for the greater good. And both now reside in paradise, where their criminal pasts haunt and encumber them no more. By welcoming criminals to paradise, God challenges the allegiances we have to law and order, to safety and security, no matter the cost. Here on earth, criminals are apprehended and charged, detained and punished, exposed and eliminated. But in paradise, they thrive. In paradise, they run free. By welcoming criminals to paradise, God questions our eagerness to separate good from bad, innocent from guilty, right from wrong. How are criminals acceptable enough for paradise, but threats and problems here on earth? And this is not something restricted solely to Jesus' time and place. If ancient Rome could get it wrong, surely so could we. A few weeks ago, 60 Minutes featured a prison in Cheshire, Connecticut. The prison recently implemented a small program inspired by prisons in Germany that utilizes a more relaxed approach to incarceration. The program, called True, focuses on rehabilitation rather than punishment. For most of the day, prisoners are not locked in their cells. They play board games with staff. They participate in support groups. They practice yoga. Younger prisoners with shorter sentences are even mentored by prisoners serving life sentences. Amazingly, rates of behavioral issues are drastically lower within the program than they are outside of it. Though the program is still too young to be evaluated as a whole, it has worked wonders for certain individual participants. One correctional officer recently helped a prisoner secure a scholarship to play basketball in college. Another prisoner told Bill Whitaker that True has helped him see that everybody is capable of basic human decency. It's just that it has to be nurtured, to be brought out. We're used to thinking of paradise as the place we go to if we're lucky when we die, as a land flowing with milk and honey far, far away. But maybe the doors of paradise are opened here on earth, when we stop mocking and blaming and sniping at one another, when we confront our own tendencies to dismiss, to reject, and to punish. When even amidst our suffering, uncertainty, and despair, we recognize the capacity for basic human decency that exists deep within each one of us, and choose to nurture it and bring it out.